No commercials, 800 numbers, or offers in this vintage Dreamland from 2001 remain valid at this time.
Dreamland with Whitley Strieber on the Premier Radio Networks.
This is Whitley. We're back. We're going to be talking to Dr. Brian O'Leary in just a minute about many, many, many different things. Brian was the first Mars astronaut. Brian should have gone to Mars and come back long since by now. Why didn't he? What went wrong? Why didn't we send anyone to Mars? Instead, we've sent nothing but robot probes, and we jump through hoops, bend over backwards, and do everything we can possibly do to say, no, 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 there's no higher life forms or no life forms at all of any kind on Mars. Well, we'll find out about that from Brian. Also, free energy. Is it a reality? During the recent disclosure project, if you looked at the tape of that on the internet, they claimed that it was a reality and that it was being covered up in order to not disturb the current energy economy and by implication the people who are making a lot of money off of it. Well, is that true? We'll find out, or we'll try to find out from Brian. He certainly knows a lot about free energy. He's written a book about it. He's written a lot of books. He's got a new book, in fact, coming out this right now called Reinheriting the Earth. And I think it's a wonderful book. I've been looking through it, reading it in the past week since it's been here for 2 weeks. And so we're going to have a lot of fun with him. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has issued the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center has issued another bulletin for Hawaii saying, once again, a watcher warning may be issued for Hawaii in the near future, but not now. So things seem to be okay, at least on that front.
Whitley, I think we should tell people why Linda did not have a report tonight.
Oh, that's right.
And she will not have a report
next week either. Yes, Linda Moulton Howe is deep in the jungles, or on her way to the jungles, I should say, of Laos, where she is going to be involved in a search for the Bigfoot of Asia, not the abominable snowman, hopefully in Laos. Unless he's gotten lost, since Laos is lowland jungle. Catherine Cook, the director of the Mind Science Foundation, former director of the Mind Science Foundation, a close friend of ours, just came back from Nepal in April, where she made an attempt to find the abominable snowman, following in the footsteps of her uncle, the great adventurer Tom Slick, who was the first person to go on a scientific expedition in search of the Yeti back in the 50s. And she's going to be on Dreamland later on, but I think that Linda's journey, Linda is such a good, hard-nosed science reporter. Her journey is going to be absolutely fascinating.
It's part of a cable show that's going to be shown in the fall, The Wild Men of Laos. The Wild Men of Laos. It's going to be a cable TV.
Oh, that's right. The Wild Men of Laos. Are
yes.
they really there? There's traditions going back hundreds of years about the Wild Men of Laos.
During the Vietnam War, our soldiers saw these Bigfoots over there.
Now, were they... I know Linda told us about this off
yes.
the air, but were they large or small or...
That I'm not sure, but they were seen
yeah.
by our guys.
So we'll see what Linda comes up with. Maybe she'll come back with evidence, at least. I wouldn't be at all surprised. Linda is the kind of person who's liable to do that. You know, it's interesting, all of these female adventurers around, Catherine Cook, Linda Moulton Howe, we have another acquaintance who is preparing an expedition to the abyssal deep in search of the giant squid. She's also a woman. Is that a trend, Dan, do you think?
I hope so.
You hope so? You want to lead an expedition?
I don't think I'm up to it. I really don't think. I think walking around the neighborhood for an hour each night doesn't really do the trick.
Doesn't prepare you to go to the Abyssal Deep?
No.
No, I won't be going to the Abyssal Deep either. I can tell you that right now. I'm perfectly happy here on the surface. But it's going to be fascinating to hear the reports from her when they do that, in October. Okay, in just a couple of minutes, we'll be back with Dr. Brian O'Leary. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland, and we'll be right back. It's Dreamland. We're back. We have Dr. Brian O'Leary with us. Brian, it's good to talk to you.
Hi, Whitley. It's always good to talk with you.
Oh, it's fun. I'm excited about Reinheriting the Earth. It looks like a wonderful book. We're going to be talking about that a little bit during the course of the evening. But before we even start, Brian prefers not to sell his material through unknowncountry.com or our 800 number. So get out a pen and pencil if you want to get this. This is how to do it. And I will be repeating this frequently during the course of our time together. It's Dr. Brian O'Leary, P.O. Box 2105, Ridgeway, Colorado, 81432. You can get an autographed copy for $27. If you give him $40, he'll throw in Exploring Inner and Outer Space, and a total of $67, you'll get another book, The Second Coming of Science, as well. And I will be repeating this again, so if you didn't get your pen and paper out, don't worry about it, you can do it later. Brian, let's start with Mars. We had Tom Van Flandren on the show a few weeks ago, and it was absolutely fascinating. Arthur C. Clarke recently, in pointing to some formations on Mars that look like gigantic trees. Have you seen those?
No, I haven't seen what look like gigantic trees. No, myself, I haven't. But
okay, well, I won't bring that up then, because just to simply to say that Arthur C. Clarke used those as evidence of higher plant life, forms of plant life on Mars. He was the other planetologists disagreed with him, and nevertheless, what do you think is going on Mars, just in general, given all of the controversies and all of the new pictures that have come?
Well, that's probably the best question one could possibly ask. Let's put it this way, since Viking photographed this gigantic mesa that resembles a human face, the face on Mars.
Right.
That was photographed in 1976, and now 25 years later, we're still not at the point where we can properly interpret not only those pictures, but also the tens of thousands that have been taken over the past 3 years by the Mars Global Surveyor. And what's happening, Whitley, I think, is that there is a NASA cover-up of sorts going on. What it is exactly, I don't know, because, of course, one of the tactics used by those who cover up things is that they surround nuggets of information with disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, just following this whole thing and having been a member of the Society for Planetary SETI Research and having worked for many, many years with Tom Van Flandern and others, who I think are reputable scientists, that there is enough anomalous evidence, there are enough unusual features that have been photographed both by Viking and the Mars Global Surveyor, that this warrants the most thorough investigation that one could do on any kind of scientific question. And yet the inquiry into this has been ridiculed, and NASA has never really taken a serious look at some of these objects. And what makes matters even more challenging is that most of the time when there is some object like the face, and they release pictures to the public, very often they use image processing techniques which tend to destroy the face-like appearance of it so as to confuse or diffuse attention from the public.
Now, Brian, you would think that this would be the most wonderful, exciting, glorious news that that there may be the ruins of a civilization on Mars. After all, this solar system is billions of years old. It seems just ludicrous that we could possibly think that we understand all of what went on in the past, and yet they work like demons to make sure that nobody really inquires into this.
Yeah,
strange.
It's very strange, and it's very similar to, of course, the inquiry into the UFO question. Very similar. It seems as though the government, whether it's NASA or the Air Force or whichever agency that addresses the question, whether it's UFOs or anomalies on Mars or crop circles or whatever, that they're following a policy that was recommended in 1961 by a panel of the Brookings Institution, which mm-hmm. basically said that if there is any telltale evidence of non-humans or any kind of intelligence that could be found elsewhere in the solar system or whatever, that evidence should be kept from the public. And at that time, and this was 1961, the Cold War was alive and well, and during that time there may have been some official reason to be very cautious about such matters, but at this point it just seems utterly ridiculous. And yet at the same time, the mass media, New York Times and so forth, and NASA all play this party line, and the truth is sacrificed in the process. It's sort of like we're living in a time very similar to the time of the Renaissance, when Galileo and others have made certain suggestions contrary to the cultural mainstream view, and the truth is sacrificed.
The never a straight answer. I think that really is what the NASA acronym stands for, and it's unfortunate.
Yes.
We really need a planetary exploration organization that is perhaps partly government-funded, but only partly. I'll tell you that this is all going to change in the future because there are too many private individuals who are set to go, and the technology is changing so rapidly, the propulsion technology and so forth. I think we're going to see private expeditions to the planets, maybe even before we see public expeditions or expeditions from other countries. You were the first Mars astronaut. What happened?
Well, I was appointed in 1967. I had just completed my PhD thesis at Berkeley about the surface properties of Mars. And this was when we had just sent a Mariner unmanned spacecraft to Mars. So we were just beginning to open our eyes to the red planet. And since that time, a number of things have happened. First of all, the Mars program was canceled by NASA. The reason being that Lyndon Johnson, who was president then, was getting more interested in Vietnam, and so there were some budgetary restrictions. At least that was the public reason given for canceling the Mars program. And since then, manned Mars missions has been a very political football. And, of course, we know that most of the unmanned spacecraft that have gone to Mars over the past 20, 30 years have failed.
Yes.
And the reason for that is not known to me. I tend to be very cautious as a scientist and want to look at things carefully on all sides. And it's entirely conceivable that some information about Mars has been collected by some of these various spacecraft that have gone there, and it just hasn't been released to the public.
Yeah, I believe we had a story on unknowncountry.com, which I cannot presently reach, so I can't be sure, within the past year about that very issue I think we talked about it on Dreamland with Tom Van Flandren about, and there's some information about it on his website, which is, I believe, metaresearch.com. And there was a certain amount of evidence that some of those satellites did continue to report back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary. I mean, that they would actually be sending satellites out to Mars and lying about this in order to avoid having to tell the public what the satellites saw. If that happened, that's creepy.
It is, in part because NASA's charter is that it's a civilian public agency and that everything that it does and reports should be immediately released to the public. And yet that's not what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. That is absolutely not what's happening. It's metaresearch.org, by the way, is Tom's website. For example, Malin Space Sciences, by the use of what I think could charitably be called illegal fiction, quote-unquote owns the Mars imagery before it's released to the public. This imagery is bought and paid for by the American people. So where do they get off saying Malin Space Sciences owns it? But they do that in order to justify editing it and concealing what they care to conceal of it. Since NASA's not doing it, Mellon Space Sciences is doing it. So it's okay, presumably.
That's right. That's one way they can administratively wiggle around the problem.
Right. Right, but at least it's an interesting thing that it is an admission on the part of NASA that there is a problem, and also I think that there are things that they do not wish us to see about Mars. Otherwise, why do it that way? Why go to the trouble?
That's right. So in many, many ways, the years of investigation of the Mars anomaly phenomena bear a very, very striking resemblance to the whole UFO-ET question. It's very, very similar.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's change now and go a little bit forward in time. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. I think we have a couple of minutes left. We can get into this a little bit. You were actually present at the Disclosure Project in Washington.
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, give us your take on what was happening there and what its significance might be.
Well, I think that in many respects, I think I'm very impressed with what Steve Greer has been able to do through the years. Dr. Greer, as we all know, is an emergency room physician who's taken a keen interest in the UFO abduction phenomenon and has also been collecting eyewitness testimonies from government officials who may have witnessed UFO phenomena. And so through the years, as we all know, he's been gathering these testimonies, and the Disclosure Conference a month ago was basically a culmination of that process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of his work has matured some, although it has a long way to go. There is a narrative that's very interesting and I think worth checking out in research, which basically was that since the time of Eisenhower, the whole question of official activities around the UFO phenomenon has been kept away from the public, and the witnesses have been sworn to secrecy. And yet now he's gathered more than 100 witnesses who claim to have had various experiences and who have now come public with them, which I think takes a great deal of courage. On the other hand, as I think you very well point out through the years, is that this phenomenon is an incredibly complex. And so the narrative, the story, which I think to a large degree does hang together as its own story, it certainly is just one aspect of what is obviously...
You mean the sort of the Galactic Federation story?
Right. The story that
there's a Galactic Federation out there waiting, and if only we would stop shooting at them, they could land and teach
exactly,
us.
Exactly. And that they have transferred some technologies to the government, but some they have held away from it. And so we have... That's one of the reasons why we're in the fossil fuel dilemma we're in now, which I think is a very interesting narrative, but it I think bears a lot more testing, and it could be...
Well, yeah, the problem I have with it is a very simple and straightforward one. How many letters did we get, Anne, on the communion letters of narratives of experiences? 500,000?
Oh, sure.
And between the two of us, we read virtually all of them.
Yep.
No one ever mentioned a Galactic Federation or any contact from anything like that.
Nope. No, they didn't.
They didn't. Now, you'd think if the good guys were out there trying to reach us, they would have managed to say hello to somebody if the bad guys can do it. Okay, we'll be talking a little bit more about this when we get back with Dr. Brian O'Leary in just a couple of minutes. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland.
Strieber on the Premier Radio Networks.
This is Whitley. We're back with Dr. Brian O'Leary. His new book is Reinheriting the Earth. You can get it by sending a letter, a check, or money order to Dr. Brian O'Leary, P.O. Box 2105, Ridgeway, that's R-I-D-G-W-A-Y, Colorado, 81432. That's Dr. Brian O'Leary, P.O. Box 2105, Ridgeway, Colorado, 81432. The book is $27. Put in a check for $40. He will include another book of his, Exploring Inner and Outer Space. Give him $67, and you'll get Exploring Inner and Outer Space, The Second Coming of Science, and Reinheriting the Earth, all autographed by Dr. O'Leary. Brian, we were talking about the disclosure conference and the lack of evidence. Of course, the existence of abductees was never even mentioned in the conference, presumably because what we say is just too odd for Dr. Greer's comfort level. But nevertheless, it's disturbing that there is not much sign of benevolence. If you're in a close encounter situation, you have to make it. What is good about it is something you have to make for yourself. It's not giving you anything. There's nothing uplifting about it. It's a tremendous assault on the mind and body. That that just wasn't there at the conference.
Right, I know. It's a very limited view of reality, although it's one that I'm hoping some good will come of it, in spite of the fact that the interpretation of what's happening is very limited. Obviously, there is activity, there's cover-up, there's secrecy, there is a narrative of some sort having to do with the which technologies have been transferred and which ones not from other intelligences to secret governments and that sort of thing. And it's that line of reasoning that I think is very interesting to pursue, but not from the broader point of view, not, as you say, not from the pervasiveness of the abduction phenomenon. And obviously you're one of the world experts on that, so I imagine that the disclosure conference was a bit of a disappointment.
Well, it was. I felt like an important element of this community was left out because we have a story to tell that they just basically didn't want to hear. And I'm going to go on Coast to Coast AM on July the 2nd with a program called UFOs the Dark Side, and I'm going to be reading from this vast treasure trove of letters, many of which we still have. And I think that the picture of the phenomenon that is going to be painted is going to amaze people, because it's just one thing, I mean, among the many things Carl Sagan was right about, he's wrong about a lot of things, but one thing he was right about is he said that the close encounter, the alien contact, if it ever happens, will be stranger than we can possibly imagine.
I think that the best analogy I like to think of are Aboriginals first encountering a Western civilization. And you'll have some members of the culture that are interested only in certain aspects, like, for example, how do the governments relate? Other people there would be more interested in the personal or maybe more mystical aspect of what's going on. It's almost you can pick and choose whatever aspect of it you want and pursue it in depth. And I think your work in this field and the work of a number of other people like John Mack and others, I think, is very...
Bud Hopkins.
Bud Hopkins.
Dave Jacobs. Yeah.
David Jacobs and so forth. It's very... positive work, but sometimes people tend to overly simplify the interpretation of what's going on. And what's going on, obviously, is something so colossally mysterious, something which we need to legitimize as an area of inquiry, and something that's been steadfastly denied. And now we're beginning to get stories out of the government. On the other hand, one has to be very careful about some of those stories, because around every nugget of information, there could be clouds of disinformation.
Yes, always.
And the abduction phenomenon itself, I find myself very interested in John Mack's taste or his take on it, which is basically that, for one thing, one message that seems to be constantly given to us, it's such an obvious one from my perspective, having read about the deteriorating environmental conditions of the Earth and having experienced it, is that there's a very stern warning. And, of course, this also comes from your work, a very
Absolutely.
Stern warning given to us that we had better change our ways on this planet or this is it. I've made a 3-year study, and that led to my new book, which is now just out, Reinheriting the Earth. Is I looked at the question of the sustainability of the major systems of the Earth, whether you call it energy, or raw materials, or the amount of water that's.
Right.
All of these resources, the major resources of the Earth, are running out. And we're getting into these peculiar situations where demand is now outstripping our ability to produce whatever that resource is, whether it's oil or natural gas or increasingly water, and the amount of forests that are left on the planet. I've had a really good hard look at that and didn't want to deny or look the other way or duck out of the problem. And we find, particularly in the United States, just a great abuse of working towards a sustainable future, which is going to be absolutely essential if we're to survive.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get unhooked from fossil fuels over
well,
the next...
Well, also, yeah, from, we've also, you mentioned water, which is a huge problem. You have these sort of scary companies like Monsanto running around the world right now buying water rights.
Exactly.
So that they can sell water to people who will be desperate for it soon.
That's right. That's
scary
right.
Stuff.
Monsanto, Bechtel, and Enron. Enron is the natural gas giant. Are all wanting to co-opt the world's water supplies, and this is scary.
Very scary.
I think when we look at these data, one doesn't even have to be interested in the UFO phenomenon to make it very clear that if that we must change our ways, and it's a big job to get unhooked from fossil fuels. We are in such denial about it. Europe is beginning to wake up to this fact.
Well,
and
let's get into free energy a little bit. I know that you recently spent a day with Randall Mills of Blacklight Power. Tell us a little bit, what is Blacklight Power, first of all?
Okay, well, that's a company that is being funded now by private investors to the tune of about $35 million. And this is a man from MIT, a brilliant scientist, who claims to have developed a new form of hydrogen called the hydrino. It's basically a lower ground state of hydrogen. It's a, it's a novel hydrogen chemistry, basically, which when you manipulate a hydrogen gas and you heat it up and manipulate it with certain chemical compounds, the compounds act as catalysts that make the hydrogen collapse more than it normally does, releasing unusual amounts of energy. And so this is one of several people that are researching what one calls new energy. This is this could include the so-called zero-point energy, some of the magnetic motors that are out there now that are being researched that appear to produce more energy than goes into it as measured by traditional means. Cold fusion is another example. These are all suppressed technologies, ones that if they were supported as they should, I think, by public funding and very carefully controlled, too, to make sure that this is not abused, that these could supplant, in very rapid order, fossil fuels, provide an almost unlimited amount of clean energy for the world. And the black light concept is one of several. I'm very excited about the prospects of this free energy or new energy.
Yes, I know.
And yet at the same time, just like the UFO phenomenon and the Mars anomalies, there's been a political spin put on this, which is basically one of denial. So once again, we are in a collision course with a possible future that could either be very positive, where we get off fossil fuels and we don't pollute the planet and we convert to these new and exotic energy sources. Then we don't have to take the intermediate step of huge solar farms or wind farms or using hydrogen, all of which I think are very positive initiatives, but ones that are, could also prove to be very expensive. Whatever way we go, we're going to have to get off fossil fuels. And yet Bush and Cheney have gone in just the opposite direction. Now their policies, and of course they're oil men, so this, it's no small wonder that they want to burn up fossil fuels until they run out, basically. And meanwhile,
well,
price gouge in California and so forth.
Brian, we are coming up on a break right now. We've got to take a little break. And when we get back, we will talk. We will ask Brian O'Leary the question, which of these energies, of these new energy sources, are likely to be the best? Which should we really look at? This is Whitley Strieber. It's Streamland. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Streamland. We're back. I believe we're back. Okay, Brian, you with us?
Yes, I'm with you, Whitley. And
great.
I might want to mention one other thing is that my books, Reinheriting the Earth, is $27, as you point out.
Right.
But the other books are $20 each. So,
oh, I see. It's not clear from this message that I have.
Right, right. So that $40 would only get you the other two books.
Oh, I see.
47
I'm sorry.
Would get you one of the others and re-inheriting the earth.
Okay. And to get those books, you write Dr. Brian O'Leary, P.O. Box 2105, Ridgeway, Colorado, 81432. Enclosed check, money order. Gold pieces probably would work.
It's an old-fashioned way of doing it, but it works.
Yeah, well, I hope it does for you, Brian, because I've always thought you really ought to be on the unknowncountry.com store, which is...
Well, actually, my videos are.
They're not.
They're not.
What? No, not anymore.
Oh.
Sold them all out.
I think they sold out, actually.
Yeah.
Oh.
Let's get back to free energy. There are a lot of different types of free energy out there. What works?
Well, it's a very difficult thing to assess thoroughly. In other words, there are a number of people out there with research devices, whether they're magnetic motors or solid-state devices or electrostatic devices or plasma devices or hydrogen gas cells or various cold fusion devices. These are all categories of new energy devices. There is an excellent book called or magazine called Infinite Energy, which reports the latest in that field. And also in my book, Reinheriting the Earth, I give a summary of the state of the art. I have an appendix in there where there was an article I had recently published in England on the state of the art of new energy technologies. Basically, I don't know which one will be the winner. You know, it's sort of like the Wright brothers have already flown on this, but we're not delivering mail and passengers yet. And it's very hard to second guess which particular technology will win. But the one thing that I can bet on is that one or more of them will over the next 10 to 20 years as we begin to open our eyes, as we get beyond the suppression, the disbelief that these energy sources might actually revolutionize the world. I think that what we need first is to become aware of how pressing the need is to get off of fossil fuels, to get off of nuclear power, that we have been, as a society, so hooked on burning fossil fuels that right now we're going to have to undo perhaps the greatest financial empire in the history of the world, and namely the vested interests in oil and natural gas and coal, that those interests now need to be overturned in order for us to survive. It's that serious. For a while there, I didn't think so, but now I'm sure of it, that the amount of global warming and climate change, the toxic, polluted atmosphere as a result of burning fossil fuels, all of those things now need to be rapidly, and by rapidly I mean the next 10 to 20 years, converted to renewable, clean energy. And there are many, many options, and the ones currently available, such as solar, wind, and hydrogen, can begin immediately. And then we can go to some of these more exotic energy sources if, and this is a big if, we can muster the talent and resources that are out there and in a public way introduce this new technology to the world. And things would change very, very radically when that happens.
I wonder if it will happen or if we'll get to a point where we have gone with the other stuff so long that the society begins to unravel in the context of an environmental collapse. I worry about things like that. Probably shouldn't.
Well, I do, and just,
yeah.
you're not
well,
in denial.
Well, I can see from your book that you do.
You're looking at the situation for what it is, which is that we have become too hooked on a particular natural resource. And that resource is going to run out later this century, that's for sure. And as the demand goes up and the production capacity goes down, prices will go up. That's exactly what's happened in California. And the people that end up winning are the small number of people that run these large companies and their government friends. And the public needs to become aware of this. The California energy crisis, I think, is a wonderful case study, just like the study of the face on Mars or the study of the UFO abduction phenomenon. all of these areas of inquiry have been deemed politically incorrect because the vested powers want to keep things the way they are, business as usual. But we have to awaken as a public. And
well,
that's really what my new book is about.
Yeah, I would like to keep talking about it, but I'm coming up on the top of the hour, and this is a Reinheriting the Earth, folks, is a big book. I mean, there's a lot in here, and I just hate to say goodbye to you without at least talking a little bit about your life after death material that's in here. In the latter parts of the book, I was absolutely fascinated to read about the ketamine research that you did. Tell us just a little bit about that, but quickly, because we're coming up on the end of the program.
Well, ketamine is, of course, a mind-altering substance which can take you on a journey beyond ordinary time and space. And the post-death experience might, given reports of many, many people who have evidently come back, that's called the near-death experience, have also had similar journeys. I myself had a journey in my near-death experience in 1982 in an automobile accident. So this area of research, I think, the fact that we're not alone in the universe, the fact that we do seem to survive death, should be front and center in all of our knowledge systems rather than to be suppressed and denied. And so I think that we're really looking at two big issues, and in my new book I weave the two issues together.
Together,
one is
exactly.
A sustainable future for the Earth, and the other is to seek greater truth. And not be afraid
recognition of the existence of the soul, which we were touching on a little earlier when we were talking about reincarnation with one of our earlier guests tonight. And it's a quite a wonderful journey that you take in Reinheriting the Earth, Brian. I think that we ought to all take it very seriously. And certainly every close encounter witness and abductee almost that I've ever met has come away with the same message that there's something going wrong with our beautiful old world, and we need to fix it, and we can fix it.
Absolutely. We can create a vision and maybe even a global green democracy that would oversee the necessary changes. We're going to have to get away from self-interest and the rampant pollution that we're unleashing on the planet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, that music means we have come to the end of another edition of Dreamland. It's been fun. It's been a journey. There have incidentally been no changes in the tsunami warnings that we have been watching in the Pacific. They remain the same. Hawaii is not affected. The west coast of the United States is not affected. Our engineer is affected. He is J.D. Smith. Our producer has been Ann Strieber. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland, and we'll be talking to you next week. I'd like to thank Brian O'Leary very much for being with us.